This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today I'm speaking with Mr. Jamon Bathy, former White House Fellow and CEO of Platinum Technologies, and Mr. Ron Thompson, Chief Data Officer at NASA. Data security and data use create an authoritative data source, and data security, for the most part, involves a lot of the same people. But yet the conversations and contractual efforts usually are done separately. Today, we'll be discussing how to bring these two conversations together and really make organizations more powerful and more secure. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Ron, let's start with you. I always like to give the guest a few minutes to tell the audience about themselves. Ron, can you give us a little bit about yourself for those that may not know you?
Thanks, Sean. As Sean mentioned, I am the Chief Data Officer for NASA. This is a brand new position as of a little over a year's time. So it was mandated in the Evidence Act around 18 months ago. So many agencies, just like NASA, are appointing a senior executive dedicated to data for the agency, for the different agencies. So we at NASA are really taking an approach where how does this role benefit the mission? Not a compliance activity, although there are compliance mandates, part of the act that we have to ensure that we do. But it's really how do we use data more effectively for effective decision making. And NASA, like many other agencies, is a federated agency, complex mission, and absolutely very, very topical and in the news. We're doing some great, wonderful things we'll get into as we chat today. But this is a brand new role for me. This is my seventh agency. I've had various roles throughout my federal career as well as industry. But it's really an area where we can focus on transformation and really be more effective on how we're making decisions and liberating data that is purpose built and available for folks across our multiple disciplines and how we work. Is really, really making an impact to mission, and love to get into specifics as we chat today.
All right, thanks, Ron. And Jamon, what about you?
Well, Sean, I've spent the better part of 17 years in the federal government contracting industry, primarily with Lockheed Martin and through the IS&GS transition to Leidos Corporation, and then a short stint with General Dynamics IT before having the honor of being selected by the President's Commission on White House Fellowships to serve as a senior advisor within the Department of Energy. So within that past year, I've been focusing on a host of issues, including starting and operationalizing the DOE's Artificial Intelligence and Technology Office, working on data governance and security strategies, and most recently, standing up a public-private partnership with industry, academia, nonprofits, and the U.S. government to apply AI and related technologies to help first responders minimize the impact and improve response to wildfires and natural disasters. And now, in my current role, I am the founder and CEO of Platinum Technologies, which is a digital and IT professional services firm focused on serving our federal, state, and local customers. We're based right here in the Washington, D.C. metro area.
Jamon, thank you. I don't know if a lot of people outside the government and industry, but even some inside the federal government, really understand your fellowship program. I think there's a bunch of programs that are labeled fellowship. Can you just kind of talk about it real quick? Because I think it's at a level that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Yeah, and I appreciate the question, Sean. In 1964 is when the commission was established, and it was really focused on selecting leaders within community, business, or in academia, or even in a professional role, like say a physician, to experience government at the highest level. And the goal was that you would spend a year within government working on a host of domestic or international policy related issues to understand how the government works. And then when you leave, you're able to take that knowledge, understanding and experience and apply it back into your private life. So it's totally designed for the exposure and understanding to just the many facets that are important to make our nation run and continue to lead as the nation that we are. And the hope is that when you leave and you become an alumni of the program, that you take those experiences back to your community and apply it for higher impact and greater good.
Outstanding. You know, you mentioned alumni. Outside of yourself, who are some notable alumni that can help share with the audience that, that are part of this program?
There are 800 of us since 64, maybe 815 or something like that, around that number. But just some of the notable individuals like General Colin Powell, Sanjay Gupta, who's on CNN, recently announced the CEO for NBC Universal, Cesar Conde. That's another individual. But, you know, aside from that, many community leaders. One of my cohort is a captain of the Charleston Sheriff Department, right? So as much as it is sometimes a profile building activity, that's not what this was designed for. It's really about harnessing and creating impact back in your communities.
Outstanding. So, you know, you both bring a lot of experience to the show, and that's why I asked you both to come on. So let's jump right into the topic. Jamon, let me start with you. Can you share some of the data challenges that you faced when you were at the Department of Energy and also working with the White House?
So I won't speak directly for the White House or DOE since I'm now in a private sector role, but—
I know, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. But more broadly, some of the challenges that I see that the government is working through and trying to answer some tough questions on is really on one of the points that you made about authoritative sources of data, right? And there was a time when we could say that, you know, storage was cheap because disk was cheap, et cetera, but with the explosion of data, storage isn't cheap anymore. So just being able to classify the data appropriately and being able to decide what level of security or protection that needs to be applied on that is a challenge within itself. And the second component is now that there are so many cloud-first strategies within the federal government, migrating that data into these multi-tenant environments and ensuring that you've got the right level of security and protection based on government compliance and sometimes international compliance determining on what that data is also a challenge. So, you know, I'll put a bow on it by saying that, you know, we in the government, we were looking at implementing data governance strategies that reflected more about the threat assessment and classification of the data and creating, in a sense, its own enterprise architecture approach to ensure that we're giving it the due consideration that it needed.
So Ron, Jamon brings up a couple of points, right, that I know, you know, I think it's also obviously to enter into the show that I've worked closely with both of you all, Ron at VA and DPA and Jamon at Leidos. And since then we've worked on some things. But Ron, he mentions cloud first. He mentions authoritative data source. Those are things that I know you have intimate knowledge with even before you became a chief data officer. What do you think?
Yeah, so it's really a good question. And Jamon, you know, you're spot on with, you know, the containers and how, you know, how things have evolved. But we're seeing this as an opportunity, you know, the challenges as an opportunity. Like many other agencies and what I've seen, Sean, in my experiences, is a lot of data is purpose-built. It never really was designed to be shareable. It never really was designed to be taggable and make searchable, you know, and that's really the beauty of within NASA is really taking data sets that are purpose built and making it accessible. You know, our Earth science data, you know, part of our scientific and mission directorate, we deal with about 12 terabytes of data a day that we collect to study the Earth. That's projected in the next 2 or 3 years to increase to about 24 terabytes a day up with observation data. And that's just the Earth. That's not, you know, the stars and what we're doing outside. So the data is very, very large that we deal with, very, very informative. We're not sure what purpose it's going to be used outside of us collecting and making it available. But you know, I think a lot of programs are designed and a lot of, you know, this is true in other federal agencies. A lot of programs are designed to be purpose built. It never was designed to be actually accessible for other needs. So we're really taking what's called the FAIR principles, and that is making sure our data is findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. And these principles are really a foundation of how we're going back and collecting our data in the future, and how we're going back in time and making sure we can access data sets. We have a really interesting story on our COVID pandemic that we've used, and we are collaborating across federal agencies to link into authoritative data source to make decisions, you know, when to reopen our offices. You know, when is it safe for our people to come back in a physical workplace, or some of these roles may never actually go back into the workplace. But we want to make sure our leaders in the agency have these data, these authoritative data sources that are accurate, that are based on methods of understanding that everyone is using, and make sure it is available for them to make their decisions.
My guest today, Mr. Jamon Baffity, former White House Fellow and CEO of Platinum Technologies, and Mr. Ron Thompson, Chief Data Officer at NASA. Ron, I want to start with you. How would authoritative sources of data benefit the government agencies and the consumers that we serve?
We really need to make sure that we identify the authoritative data sources of how we're going to measure things. What are the definitions of terms of that everyone can really understand? A lot of government agencies are collecting a lot of the same data. So where can we sort of expand the aperture up and reuse what others are doing? And identifying and knowing what is out there and how it's being used and the definitions of being used, we're making great progress across the Chief Data Officers Council across the federal workplace in here, and working very closely together. So again, finding terms of truth, finding where the data sources are, finding standards that we all can understand and gravitate to are very, very important. A lot of our federal locations, you know, your listeners may not know, are co-located. We have multiple agencies that are in a geographic area, and some share the same building space themselves. So a lot of these data, again, are collected for a specific purpose in an agency view. So we are really looking how we can share that knowledge across the multiple agencies.
Jamon, what about you?
You know, when I think about this idea about authoritative data data sources, the challenge that I saw when I was in government, especially around when we were trying to put together this consortium, now we go from the idea of purpose-built data, that the data was for a very specific reason, and then we start to think about how can we repurpose this to serve other missions, and create the liquidity that Ron's talking about, you know, for our citizens and giving them that real-time information. And I start to think about the cyber challenges, right? And you heard me mention earlier about threat assessments and usability and who actually gets access to the data. And these are real considerations that, you know, we're looking at Platinum, because at the end of the day, even if the data on itself may have a specific purpose or use, once you start to combine that information with other sources of data and you're creating new viewpoints, there become issues that you might have to look at from the perspective of cyber or information assurance, and then some type of governance model to make sure that these various components of data become stay accessible, right? So then now you're starting talking about service level agreements or user level agreements, and at the end of the day, because that data was purpose-built for a specific reason, and there wasn't necessarily a service level associated with that beyond its particular purpose, now you're trying to figure out, well, how do we manage that as a whole and start to think about, well, does this new set of data, as it's been pulled together, present new security issues? Do I have to protect it differently? And the associated equities within government in terms of memorandums of understanding. So I think it's an interesting problem to solve. We are looking at that very hard, just because we believe that a push to make data more accessible and liquid is not going away. And being able to get at it real time in a situation where, as a world, we are likely going to be a lot more virtual or stay a lot more virtual than we used to be, is going to be important. So, you know, more to come on that, but I do think that this is a new season for how we think about the governance and security for multiple data sources, especially across the federal enterprise.
I definitely want to go into that, because I definitely have an opinion on that, but Jamon, I don't want to lose this from you. You helped up stand up artificial intelligence, the artificial intelligence office. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into success of implementing an AI office and being involved with AI. And Ron, I am sure you have experiences being at NASA with some levels of AI. I think computing power and some of those things aren't where we need them to be. But there's a lot of steps that we have to take to get ready for those when we're there for with artificial intelligence. Can either one of you share, Jaman, I'll start with you on where you've learned from as you start to prepare an organization for AI, what you learned?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, you know, AI is not a thing, you know, like where you can, you know, build a computer, and there's so many components to that when it comes to learning models. And where I think the government has a really strong contribution to make is that we have enormous amounts of data that we can make available to help industry drive new learning models to solve some problems or help us solve for the unknown before it happens. And I'll use the example that I told you about with the consortium. You know, the one critical problem that we were trying to solve was how do we get information to a first responder that's fighting a fire in California? And just thinking about the multiple modes of data, such as the full motion video or still image data of the actual fire perimeter, overlay that with satellite imagery from NOAA or even NASA, and maybe soil samples to say, hey, this area might burn, you know, quicker than other areas, and then given some level of predictability within the first 5 minutes to first responders in terms of where they need to be positioning to solve that problem. So I do think the government biggest contribution is going to be around making data accessible and ensuring that it's used responsibly and it's used for protecting the lives and assets of citizens. And that's always going to be, you know, a point of contention, maybe healthy contention when it comes to industry, because industry generally is in business to make a profit, right? And the government isn't just necessarily giving away the information so you can make a profit, right? So there are some of those ideas there that do have to be worked out. And I think that's where the next step of that consortium is going to really pay dividends in terms of being able to pull together the public and private sector to get that moving forward. And, you know, just quick answer to your question on setting up the office. It was an interesting experience because you have to go through the OMB process, the congressional process, the process within the building in terms of getting the office formally set up and getting the line item in the budget for. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, you know, how does this help our nation's citizens and what are we going to do within this office to move that ball forward? And we were successful in that initial component in getting it started up and then operationalizing the organization to do great things on behalf of our nation. So I'm just proud to see that it's going to continue and that there's a great team there led by Cheryl Ingstad, who's the director at DOE for the AITO office. And just look forward to see what they're going to be doing in the future.
Ron, I want to come to you because Jaman brought up a lot of information about how we can bring different purpose-driven data together to really inform and bring almost wisdom to an organization. And I know as NASA looks at rockets and looks at other things related to your mission, you guys do a lot of that as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you've learned as trying to mature the data and bring it into a component like an AI office or a consortium?
Absolutely, Sean. And this is an area that we are very rich and a world leader in. So I'm gonna go over some of the things that we're doing as part of our transformation effort, our digital transformation effort. I will be moving off in addition to my CDO responsibilities in about the next couple months up into the Office of the Administrator, actually doing digital transformation for the agency. So my partner, Jill Marlowe, and I are going to be dedicated as senior leaders of the organization focused on business transformation. And AI, machine learning, artificial intelligence, these are one of our key tenant areas. We're calling them thrust areas. And really, it's a strategic thrust for the agency to work across all of our mission directorates. And we are early in that process, but we have some amazing stories to share with you. You know, you've heard about rovers being on Mars for years. You know, we've been launching rovers to study the planet and get knowledgeable about having human exploration there in the very near future. So we have autonomous vehicles on Mars, and that really uses automation in a way that to give us better understanding of the planet. We can take soil samples, and then most recently, we did launch our next mission to Mars. It just launched a couple months ago, and it will be landing early 2021. So really, that's really what we're doing in the autonomous vehicle area, and we're taking AI and learning. As you know, Mars is pretty far away. We can't just get to it like a video call or audio call like we do right now. So we want to put as much intelligence at the edge, as much intelligence on these remote rovers as possible. And we are using AI and machine learning for that. And then we're also taking process transformation and using robotics, process automation, taking the human out of repetitive tasks, and really taking a look at all of our processes across the agency. This is another area of focus for us in our digital transformation. And as you know, Sean, NASA is a research and scientific organization, right? We do use artificial intelligence to learn and study the stars, the planets. We're mapping the cosmos, and we're using AI for that. And as well as, you know, German mentioned the wildfires out in California currently going on. We're using AI to study the Earth, and what we know about the Earth will enable us to possibly find planets outside our solar system that we can explore. So we're learning about ourselves, learning about Earth, and looking at using AI for pattern recognition out in the cosmos. And then our aeronautics example, we are using autonomous flying decision-making in our advanced air mobility programs. So here we will be having within in the very near future, autonomous vehicles, sort of an Uber-like experience, picking people up and flying them around cities. So that's coming in the very near future. And then regarding security and data, you know, we're using solutions, commercial solutions such as Splunk for log monitoring. And as you know, Sean, being a former CISO yourself, we are very good at once a security incident happens, responding after the fact. But we're really hoping to use AI and machine learning to know about those incidents and forward predict what behavior or what actually will happen in the future. So look at it as a probability, a statistical probability side of the house. And then the commercial area with these solutions, these platforms are really beginning to show promise for that. And we are hoping to really bolster the partnership that we have with our external partners to have us learn what we're doing internally and then have these capabilities advanced. And then lastly, Sean, I want to make sure we talk about the ethical use of AI. You know, this is something we in NASA and across other federal agencies are really, really taking a look at, is how AI is going to be used, how we can look for bias and make sure that bias is not being programmed into AI. So we're really taking a really good look at ethical use, and we're seeing great promise of other agencies such as the DoD is in sort of a leader in that. And we're really learning from them, bringing it back within our agency, and then helping the broader community as well.
All right. So, you know, both of you mentioned it, and the show, the name of the show is Savage Chat, right? So we've been talking a lot about bringing data protection as the next level or the next phase of cybersecurity across the industry for a very long time. But what has been your experience today with data protections? Jamar, let me hit you first.
I think there's an evolution, right? So the idea of just protecting data was simply, hey, is it secure where it's at rest? And we moved on to, is the data encrypted while it's at rest? And then are we securely transitioning that data from point A to point X in a secure way? So I think that's where we have been. And then I think about now where we're going is with the idea around, you know, quantum and quantum computing and being able to use that type of computing power to break encryption keys and being able to protect the data in movement and having a counter to that quantum risk that we're starting to see out there. I think that's something that's on the horizon. And I also think, again, some of the security in just terms of accessibility, right? The fact that data may have been incredibly accessible at a particular point. And when you're migrating that data into, whether it's another infrastructure, whether it be cloud or whether it's going to be for other use, I think there is an information assurance component that needs to be injected into that process. And then any relative cyber controls based on what the intended new use is for that repurposed data. So a lot of it to me is around the models and the architectures that are going to be associated with what is the new reason that this data is going to be used for, and addressing that upfront. There are many tools that are out there these days, and a lot of them are very good, but it's really around the process and ensuring that, you know, you've got the corporate or organizational buy-in for what it's going to take to segment and protect data at various levels. And the last component I'll say is on making sure that you're not just too heavy-handed with the protection, right? Because the more monolithic you get, the more expensive that gets, right? And from a taxpayer perspective, you know, if we can avoid that, that's always a good thing. And from an industry perspective, you are trying to give your clients the best use for their dollar. So again, I default back to the actual design of these systems that are going to be needed to be put in place that make access to this data future-proof and also agile in terms of what the customer or citizen's needs are going to be.
Ron, what about you?
So I'm going to sort of riff on Jermon a little, his comment about sort of overreacting. And this is not an, Sean, this is not a NASA example. I think this is using my experience and lens sort of outside of my current agency right now. But I think there's a tendency, and this is a perspective comment, right? There's a tendency, I think, to overreact when you're chasing something, when you're behind. And I think we really need to strike a balance on how we protect our data. We really need to make sure we classify it properly, number one, and we're not putting too little or too much controls over our data set. So that's the number one. And that requires a tight coupling and understanding with the business and really understand what the data is and how it's to be used and what's the true sensitivity of it. So that understanding very early in the process really would benefit. But I think, you know, what I've seen is, again, depending on perspectives, we tend to maybe underreact or overreact in some cases. So striking that balance is really, really important.
We've had a plethora of information that we've talked about today, but we're out of time. So I'm going to have to put a second show together to even get into the data security in much more depth. So I want to thank you both for joining me today. My guests today have been Mr. Jermon Bafferty, former White House fellow and CEO of Platinum Technologies, and Mr. Ron Thompson. We will see you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.